When we last spoke to Maritime Administration head Mark Busby, he had just taken over. That was several months ago. First order of business was dealing with a detailed report on MARAD prepared by the National Academy of Public Administration. Busby gave an update on MARAD at this week's Sea Air Space Conference, where I spoke with him.
You know, the NAPA study was a very good study, and we endorsed pretty much all of their findings. And basically, they said you need to take a look at what you're doing at MARAD. You know, there's been it's one of those organizations where a lot of things have kind of creeped in over the years. Is your mission statement still germane? Does it still reflect what you're actually doing now? And all of the various missions that have come our way. So it asked us to look at ourselves internally, which was a good thing, something I would have done anyway coming in the gate as a new commander. So it's been very useful for us to take that do that self-reflection.
So is your challenge changing the missions to fit the vision statement or changing the vision statement to fit what you actually do?
Our mission statement actually dates back to our formation in the Merchant Marine Act of 1936, and that's pretty straightforward. That really has not changed. That's what we do. The vision has probably needed to be modified just a little bit, but a lot of what we do really, I think the biggest thing is we've taken a much more national security focus as to what we do. There's always been the economic piece for the peacetime Merchant Marine, but what I would call the wartime or conflict national security side of it really is very, very more important, I think, today than it ever was. That's kind of an area that we're spending a lot of time focusing on.
Yeah, that's a big unknown because the national security situation is shifting. There's a lot of potentials happening in the world right now, nothing really actual. But from week to week, almost, it seems to change. And so what does MARAD do to stay on top of things, to be ready should the call come and you need to do that major transport mission of all the assets that America needs where it needs them?
Well, I like to tell people that our Merchant Marine flag says in peace and war for a very good reason. You know, the peacetime Merchant Marine and the people that, conduct the peacetime commerce flying under the U.S. flag are the very same people that I must call upon to man up all of our government sealift ships. You know, the 61 ships that the government owns, the 46 in the Ready Reserve Force, and the 15 that are in Admiral D. Mewborn's MSC sealift forces.
Right.
All of those are in five-day readiness with minimal skeleton crews. All the rest of that crew has to come from the sailing Merchant Marine today. So having enough ships and enough mariners today in peacetime to ensure that we have enough to do our wartime mission is really what I've been focusing on a lot, because what I found out is we are on the ragged edge of having enough people. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I reported to Congress that we're about 1,800 mariners short for a prolonged sea lift. Anything greater than about 6 months, we run out of people. And, it's difficult to have a base of mariners if you don't have work for them to do in peacetime.
Mm-hmm.
So if those ships don't exist, the mariners don't exist. So it all sort of works together. So the peacetime role is really critical, and getting more of those peacetime U.S. flag ships is kind of what I'm spending a lot of my days working on now, do that.
We're speaking with Mark Busby. He is administrator of the Maritime Administration. And so on that people issue, presuming you have the ships to berth them in, what is your strategy on human capital being part of the transportation department?
Right. We're trying to come at it from a couple different avenues, and it all comes back to cargo. Cargo is king. You'll hear people, in the industry say that all the time, because you have to have something to carry to justify ships being there to carry it, which then requires a certain number of people. So in order to get to the end state, which is the number of people you need, that has to come from ships, that has to come from cargo. So figuring out where we get our hands on more cargo, and whether that's, we're about to become a net energy exporter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of product, that's a lot of cargo that should be carried on U.S. flag ships.
Mm-hmm.
Currently most of it is not. That's a way to gain fleet size. And when you gain fleet size, we think it needs to be on the order of about 40 to 45 ships.
Mm-hmm.
That would support about 1,800 or 2,000 or so more people. If we could figure out how to get about 40 more ships under U.S. flag, assuming there's cargo for them to carry, we're kind of there.
Could you carry passengers, say, on really Spartan cruises?
That certainly could be a way to do it. I mean, it's all going to be...
There's no swimming pools on your ships.
Not at all, no. probably not on our, you know, it used to be when I sailed as a cadet, most ships had room for 12 passengers.
Right.
That was kind of the norm, which was kind of a fun way to see the world. That's kind of gone away economically. At that point, didn't make sense. A lot of European ships still have those kind of amenities.
Sure. But getting back to the human capital issue, I mean, what's the appeal of MARAD, of that type of career, to someone who wants to be at sea or at least on a ship?
You know, we don't have really too much issue getting people at the entry level. You know, we graduate right around 1,000 new, you know, mates and engineers every year out of the 6 state maritime academies, plus Kings Point, the federal academy. So getting entry-level people in there is not the issue. It's retaining those people. It's having enough jobs for them to progress through the ranks and to stick around. When you don't have, you know, when your ocean-going fleet is 81 ships, which is what our U.S. flag fleet is today, internationally trading, that's not a lot of billets. You know, our ships typically have a crew of 22. Well, times two, that's 44, you know, reliefs and that sort of thing. That doesn't equate to a whole lot of jobs. You throw in the 100 or so large Jones Act fleet ships that require unlimited tonnage licenses, which would also be of use to us. You're still not, you're talking about 181 ships, which is not a lot of jobs. So you get more ships, becomes more of a career viability. People can work toward that. And, you know, it sort of, it's one begets the other.
And if, presuming you have Navy Department support for this type of effort, and you're in the Transportation Department, is there any kind of joint effort toward making that budget case to Congress every year?
You know, there is, because our Ready Reserve Force is, those 46 ships are paid for by the Navy. Mm-hmm. I get that budget entirely from the Navy, to the tune of about $389 million a year. So, you know, it's the Navy. We manage that fleet for the Navy. And they're obviously acutely aware that in order to have that fleet ready to go, it needs to be manned correctly. Mm-hmm. You know, we're actually the military to mariner program, which is something we're working closely with the Navy and commercial industry with, you know, as a means to help transitioning you know, naval officers and other military veterans to transition smoothly into the merchant marine, to get their licenses easily. Right now, it's more easy for an Army warrant officer, vessel operator, to transition into the merchant marine than it is a naval officer, because their training and courses are already Coast Guard recognized and approved, and it counts toward license. Naval officer right now, very few of that transition. So we're working hard with the Navy to try and make that transition easier.
So 6 months in, what's your biggest challenge?
Education. It's education, and actually, as of yesterday, it was 8 months.
8 months.
Hardly
right.
Seems like six. To me, it really is emerging education, getting just about everybody to understand how closely integrated the Jones Act, our commercial fleet, the reserve forces, the peacetime force, how that all works together, you know, how it has to work together to ensure that we have, you know, national security in the form of sea lift. You know, people say the Jones Act, let's just get rid of it. You know, it costs too much. There's 100 ships under the Jones Act that provide crew. You took away those 100 ships, you've taken away the majority of people that are going to man my sea lift forces in time of war. Not to mention what it would do to shipbuilding and repair. You know, all of those Jones Act ships that get repaired in commercial yards, you take that requirement all away, they all go away. Now the few remaining shipyards that build military and Coast Guard vessels are now shouldering all of the overhead and burden. So you know, you worry about $1.5 billion destroyer, try $3.5 billion destroyer if all of that cost has to get shifted. So, you know, it's a big deal.
Retired Navy Rear Admiral Mark Busby is administrator of the Maritime Administration. I spoke with him at this week's Sea Air Space Conference, now concluding at the National Harbor. We'll post this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.